Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Cryptid Cocktail Party, a show where we have a few drinks, share a few laughs, take a dive into the unknown. I'm your host, Dave, and today I'm joined once again by Sarge minus Maynard. How's it going, buddy?
Heyo. Sorry that Maynard couldn't make it. I'm disappointed that Maynard couldn't be here, yeah, but he had...
I feel bad.
Family engagement.
Oh, okay. It's
like, no, it's not at a funeral. It's fine. It was a family thing.
You said family, and I thought it was going to be family emergency, and then I was going to feel like a huge piece of shit.
No, it was a family engagement. I would have given you a heads up if like someone died. No, he had some family stuff, you know, some get together with fam, so he couldn't be here. So I'm going to be here for both of us. And I'm joined by my 8-year-old son who's hiding currently. But he is going to be getting me beers while we record. So,
God, I need kids now. That sounds like I mean, I could train my dogs to bring me beer. I feel like that's a thing.
He also does an excellent chupacabra impression. But he's, yeah, you can kind of hear him in the background. He's just making weird noise. That's my boy. Very proud of him.
Yeah, but how's it going, man? You're doing good. You're looking good. I know you just got a...
Yeah, thank you.
You just got your degree.
I got a master's degree.
You talked about it on the last episode. That was forever ago. How long ago was that?
Oh, God, I can't even remember. It feels like it was a long time ago, but time, you know, it's a flat circle, as we found out from True Detective 1. I have no concept of time because I've been working so much and doing college and raising children and training a service dog. So I have no concept of time.
Well, either way,
it feels
man,
like it was a really long time ago.
I'm proud of you, bud. That's fucking awesome. I don't
Thank
have
you.
A degree. I know the struggles of getting your master's just because my wife did it. So I was the supportive spouse, which I'm sure.
Honestly, you have a degree by proxy. You suffered through it.
Well, yeah, because now eventually she'll make enough money for me to be like a stay at home husband. You know what I mean? So it's fine.
Oh, God, that's a fucking dream, isn't it?
Oh, but I'm glad you're doing good.
I'm schlepping myself to work every day.
Right, dude. I'm pretty sure you told me off air that you work from home. So
yeah, no, it's a hell of a commute though. I wake up. Now I have to walk over to my desk. It's fucking nuts.
Bed to office is a struggle. I get it.
It is. Well, we also talked about our struggles with our former retail life.
Yeah, dude.
We share the retail scars, the emotional scars on our bodies.
It is
both physical and mental. So I say emotional scars, but you know, there's plenty of physical scars.
I've never been in the service. You have though, but I always equate my time in retail as being like, it's like people that say like, if you've never worked in a kitchen, you'll never understand kitchen life. It's the same thing.
Right.
Like, you'll never understand retail life until you've worked in retail. And we both worked in the shittiest parts of retail.
Oh yeah.
You know what
oh
I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you right now. There are a few things in the world that made me miss Iraq. But working at Target during COVID is at the top of the list, because at least when I was in Iraq, I knew who the bad guys were.
Yeah.
You know, because if they were shooting at me, they were a problem. But at Target, it was your friends that were trying to take you down sometimes.
Yeah, it was the top brass, if you will, of Target.
Yeah.
just trying to fucking just bring you down. And it's a nightmare. It's all bad.
Exactly. And at least at Target, you knew not to trust the locals at all.
Well, did they not teach
I'm sorry,
you that?
In Iraq, you knew not to trust the locals at Target.
No,
you had no idea what you were coming up on. You had no idea what you were coming up against. They were either going to be a friend or they were going to try to get you to give them 10% off because there was a tear in the packaging.
Well, I mean,
I worked there during COVID.
If you got your Target Circle card, you get 10% off anyway, so it doesn't matter, you know?
The Target Circle card. You know what was awkward? It was calling up Target afterwards and being like, hey, I got fired. I need my Circle card moved to my personal email.
Yeah, no, I did the same thing.
That was an awkward.
And I told you that I no called, no showed. I just didn't go back. So, you know what's even worse is that after I had quit, scheduled my COVID my COVID shots at the CVS pharmacy at the Target I worked at. So I had to go in.
I love that.
After I just no-called, no-showed and like tried to be like, I did hood up, like fucking like, I was like Eminem and 8 Mile, like, and just like, real quick.
That's a total boss move. That's a boss move right there.
It was bad. Because like the CVS, the pharmacy was right next to where the locked door is, where you have to put in your number to get into like the office.
Yep.
So I was like, fuck, I really hope no one comes out that sees me. It'd be so bad.
If anybody wants the code to the Target door in Leominster, Massachusetts, you just let me know. I'll pass it on.
Oh, yeah. Well, our store had to change because... I don't know if I should say this, but most Target locked doors, the code is the store number.
Yep.
I don't know if I should say that.
Really trying to keep you out of there. You can't find it as long as you don't know how to Google the store.
All right, Sarge. I love you, buddy. Thank you so much for coming on. I know I made you.
Thank you for having me.
Made you wait a little while.
Okay. It was worth the wait.
You're a big cryptids guy. Maybe not big. I don't. Yep. I really don't know your affiliation.
No, with
cryptids.
I am. I actually have a Mothman action figure.
In last episode, you were wearing your Mothman hat and I believe a T-shirt as well. You were decked out, even though you were sitting.
Yeah, no, this
you were sitting
time
so
I'm wearing,
far back compared to Maynard. Maynard was full
well,
face.
I wanted you to see it. I wanted you to know how I felt.
Yeah, I couldn't see
about
it.
Cryptids. Now I'm wearing my more trees, less assholes shirt. I was gonna wear. I have a Bigfoot shirt, but it's all wrinkly and messed up because I don't do laundry.
Well,
I just kind of wash it and then throw it in a pile.
So that's a great segue into our episode today.
Oh, is it?
I'm
glad I brought it up.
Are you a believer in Bigfoot?
I feel like it would be naive for me to assume that there are no cryptids, right? Because back in the late 1800s, they were like, there's no way there's cryptids, and then they discovered gorillas.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big fucking like that, animal like... to not know that was there, you know? So I feel like there's a chance that there's some weird shit out there that we don't know about yet. I don't know if Bigfoot is one of them. If I drink a root beer, I might go into a deep story about possibilities of interdimensional travel. And that's why all the footage is blurry because it, you know, but
yeah,
long story short, I don't close the door on anything. Like, I'm an atheist, but I'm still not going to, you know, piss off God if I can avoid it.
Well,
same thing with Bigfoot.
I'm exactly the same way. I am an atheist, but at the same time, like, not believing in God won't make me not be a good person. You know what I
mean?
Like,
yeah.
I
don't want to fuck over people, but two, just in case.
There might, yeah. I feel like that's more agnostic than anything, but I'll still say I'm an atheist.
Yeah.
You know, but anyways, I only ask you this so I can segue into my own script that I had written.
I know you've been desperately trying to segue and I keep fucking sandbagging you.
No, your shirt was the segue, but now your answer is segueing into my script because I wrote down my response to your answer just now. So,
okay, good.
I mean, I could just do this from the top of my head. I am not a huge believer in Bigfoot. And I've mentioned this like in passing on the show before, like several times. And I don't really have a good reason to like not believe in Bigfoot because I believe in a lot of stupid shit. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe not.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think the reason behind it is because like there's been fucking way too many sightings of a Bigfoot and not enough like concrete evidence. Do you know what I mean? Like there's been,
right.
There's been like something like 10,000 reported Bigfoot sightings in the US alone. But all we get from it is either like flip, like Motorola Razr, like flip phone quality photos and videos.
Yeah.
Come on.
And I'm trying to figure out, like, this is my problem with Bigfoot. I want to believe, I desperately want there to be a large, hairy man who lives in the woods that isn't me.
Yeah.
But the problem that I have is that all of the camera footage is blurry. Mm-hmm. And cell phones have just come too far for them to still be blurry. I can take a picture of the moon and you can see.
I'm filming this on a phone. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm in focus because you know what? Like, I mean, but there are theories that like, oh, there people are afraid. Their adrenaline is rushing. So they're shaking and they take the picture. But like,
Come on.
Come on.
I got a picture. I got a picture of the sun from my cell phone during the eclipse, and you can see a sunspot. So
yeah,
knock it off. All right. Let's be real. Your buddy put on a funny gorilla suit and was walking around in the woods. You wanted to play it off, but let's not pretend that that's real Bigfoot. Like, if I see a good photo of Bigfoot, I'm not even asking for perfect quality.
You're not looking for 4K HD, like posed picture, like just something that's not like, and half the times I feel like the photos of Bigfoot that we see is just like a dark spot behind leaves. And like the leaves are making the facial, like, cause our brain does this thing where we do try to like make faces out of things that aren't there. So we could just be seeing the trunk of the tree and then like the leaves and like the little swirls.
Exactly.
But also there's too many fucking types of Bigfoots. All right.
Yeah.
we got bad.
Yeah, just like hold your phone steady so we can figure out what this shit is. My 8-year-old has ADD so bad that he looks like he's vibrating all the time. Yeah. And I can still get a good solid picture of him on my phone.
Yeah. Like a chihuahua.
Yeah. He's basically, he's just constantly shivering from energy.
Yeah. But also, like I said, there's also too many different types of Bigfoots. So we got Bat Squatch, mm-hmm. which is Bigfoot with wings. The Yeti, that's cold Bigfoot. We got the Woods Devil.
Skunk Ape.
We got the Woods Devil, New Hampshire, which is just skinny Bigfoot, and on. But there's one classification of Bigfoot that I think is just way too good to not cover, even though I don't fully believe in the whole concept of it. And that is
laid on me. I need to know.
This classification was coined by a famed ufologist, however you want to pronounce it, an author of The Mothman Prophecies, John Keel. And that classification of Bigfoot is abominable swamp slobs, or ass for short. This is 100% true.
I feel like he knew what he was doing when he named that.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to make everyone giggle with this.
So asses are used to, or abominable swamp slobs, sorry, are used
he
to.
Wins. Are he used, wins because I laughed.
Are used to describe humanoid cryptids that mainly are reported around wetlands, rivers, lakes, bayous of the United States. Has been used to describe, like you said, the skunk ape, also the Fuke monster and the Enfield monster. They're all examples of asses. All right.
Okay.
But there's one ass in particular that I want to talk about today, and that ass is known as the Murfreesboro Mud Monster. Are you familiar with the Murfreesboro Mud Monster?
No, but I'm going to be honest with you. When you're talking about mud and asses, I immediately went to Taco Bell in my head.
That's why it's such a fun subject.
A mud dragon is what it is.
So Murfreesboro is a small town in Illinois that boasts about a population of about like 7,000. I think it's like 7,100 kind of thing. And according to its Wikipedia page, has no one of note hailing from there.
Yeah, that tracks.
Okay. That are like currently alive. Besides U.S. House Representative Mike Bost. I don't know who that is, but it was the setting for a Melissa McCarthy movie and was featured on TLC's show Barbecue Pit Masters, so that's kind of fun.
Okay, that's enough of a reason to go there. I'll go anywhere for barbecue.
Yeah, but we're not here to talk about the barbecue. We're here to talk about the asses. So the Murfreesboro Mud Monster, also known as the Big Muddy Monster, was first spotted around... Get it together, man. We're trying to do an episode here.
There have been so many times where I have gotten thoroughly intoxicated, eaten Chinese food, and then the next morning created the exact same thing.
The Murfreesboro Mud Monster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or the Big Muddy Monster. Either works just fine.
Big Muddy Monster.
So
the launching of the SSC pickle.
The Murfreesboro Mud Monster was first spotted around midnight on June 25th, 1973. A young couple named Randy Needham and Judy Johnson were parked near the old boat ramp in Riverside Park, probably doing some necking, whatever it is couples back in the 70s used to do. Yeah. So the couple was
tearing it up. I get it.
The couple was sitting in their car listening to the radio. Or at least that's what they told people. I'm assuming that Randy was just straight up knuckle deep at this point.
Maxi, earmuffs, finger blasting his way to glory.
Oh, for sure. When all of a sudden they heard an ear-piercing roar that seemed to be coming from the thick underbrush near where they had parked. Randy equated the roar to that of an eagle shrieking into a microphone, which is the most American thing that I could think of. So
that is that,
yeah. God bless our troops. Yep. That's
that was fucking amazing.
Now, instead of just calling it a night and getting like the fuck out of there, Randy decided that,
yeah,
that he wanted both of them to become real life horror movie victims. He turned off the radio and scanned the surrounding area, listening and looking very carefully to see if he could spot whatever it was that made that noise. Suddenly, another roar, but this time they caught a glimpse of some movement in the brush. So Randy flipped on his headlights, which, I mean, that should have been the first thing you did when you heard the first roar.
Yeah. I mean, hold on. Give Randy some credit. Maybe it was just an aggressive queef. You don't know.
That is the problem when you, you know, when you're quote unquote finger blasting your way to glory, is that you get a little,
when you're digging for gold, you get a little, you know, you don't know what's coming up.
You get a little too aggressive. That makes sense. But illuminated by the car's headlights, they both saw a massive, stinky as hell creature moving towards them. Randy put that shit in gear and got the hell out of there as fast as he could. Now, once the couple had made it back to civilization, they drove around a bit in like a pretty much like a deafening silence inside the car before having the conversation of what to do next. You know, do they keep quiet? Do they go to the police? Do they just fucking go to another secluded spot to continue whatever they were doing beforehand? Either way.
I mean, an aggressive, like a serious, heavy, thick silence also follows a queef. So the story is not convinced me yet.
Well, so the reason why they're trying to figure it out, like for most people, when you encounter like a cryptid or an alien or something paranormal, not wanting to go to the police or report it in, like in any like official capacity is like a normal thought process. But usually that's because the witnesses, they're afraid of like ridicule, like what the town will think of them.
You know, the young kids, they're necking in the woods. They don't want to tell anybody they were fooling around in the woods. I get it.
Well, that's kind of the thing. So for Judy and Randy, it was like a little bit different. So their romance was technically a forbidden one. Apparently Judy's dad didn't approve of Randy. So Judy knew that going to the police would reveal like their illicit affair.
As a father of a 15-year-old girl, I don't approve of any man named Randy dating my daughter.
You know what's wild? Not the only Randy in the story.
That is alarming more than anything. I'm concerned at this point.
But Judy, being the patriotic citizen that she is, knew that whatever trouble she got into with her dad was nothing compared to what would happen if this big hairy ass were to go on a rampage through town. So they headed to the Murfreesboro police station to give their statement. Now,
you never want to get in the way of interrupting. You never want to interrupt the emergence of a mud monster, you know?
No, the couple filled out what is apparently known as an unknown creature report. And I did not know that this was like a thing that the police just had. I don't know if it was like a form, like, oh, here's an unknown creature report form. But anyways, they filled out an unknown creature report. They stated in the report that they witnessed an oversized, what they described this as an oversized gorilla standing roughly 8 feet tall with white, matted, mud-streaked hair. Ron, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Ron Manwaring, I don't know. He was a patrolman at the time, and he remembered this incident like off the top of his head when he was interviewed later on. And he said that, quote, the first report came in just before midnight on June 25th. A couple had been parked, quote unquote, and that's in his statement, near the boat dock on the southwestern edge of Riverside Park next to the woods. The two, who were not married, said they heard a loud screaming sound in the wooded area and observed a large creature approximately 7 to 8 feet tall. The creature appeared to
Ron needs to settle the fuck down. Who cares that they weren't married? Why is that even included in this?
It comes up again.
Okay. All right.
The creature
appeared truest thing you've said so far is that there's a cop named Ron in a small town.
Yeah. Oh, dude, just wait about small talk. You're getting ahead of yourself.
Okay.
So he said,
there's a skeeter, I'm out.
The creature appeared to have white colored hair matted with mud. The creature appeared to be walking on two legs and was proceeding towards the car, end quote. Now, Officer Manwaring to his credit, kind of believed the young couple, or at least believed that, like, they believed what they had saw kind of thing.
Okay.
His reasoning as to why he believed them was, quote, there was no advantage of them coming. There was no advantage of them to come up and report this, end quote. And the reason,
right,
because they, you know, when, if they reported to the police, they're basically risking, like, exposing their secret relationship, which in turn would bring ridicule from the town due to the fact that, as he stated before, they weren't married and they were parked by the river, clearly
finger blasting in sin.
There we go. But also they were going to, Judy's dad was going to be pissed. And they really stressed about Judy's dad. There's no information about Judy's dad, but it sounds like he's a piece of shit. Like, everyone in town just,
yeah,
knew.
He's a real dick.
It sounds like he was. So he kind of really had
look,
no.
Look, Judy's dad. He's just trying to get some guts. Let it go. Not a big deal.
So pretty much he really had. They're
trying to christen the Volvo. Calm down, bro.
But yeah, so the officer really had no choice to, like, kind of take the matter somewhat seriously, but also still skeptical. So he dispatched two patrolmen who were tasked with, like, heading out to the area to check out the claims. And those were officers Merrill Lindsay, which is two girls' first names, which I love, and Jimmy Nash.
Is this like a boy named Sue situation?
It's very much Johnny Cash.
Is the dad just like, you need to be tough, Merrill?
So they arrived just minutes after, like, the initial sightings occurred. Not long after arriving, Officer Nash discovered some weird tracks that he says they were about 10 to 12 inches long and about 3 inches wide, deeply imprinted in the mud. That's not that big for an 8-foot-tall creature, right?
Right.
I feel like that's a little small.
Yeah. What state did you say this was?
Illinois.
Not that I'm an expert in mud consistency state to state, but, you know, in New Hampshire, when you go hiking in the woods, I mean, if it's wet enough, you're going to leave a deep imprint. It's just a normal size person.
Yeah.
You're going to leave, like, you know, up to 6 inches you could leave in the mud up there, or you lose your whole goddamn boot.
You know, an imprint when you see it. They also said that this, I didn't get this from this source, and it's not in the script, but I did read that, like, the officer said that it was almost like a man wearing a shoe, and that maybe, quote unquote, the toes weren't imprinted in the mud. Come on.
Got ya.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just a dude in 12 inch shoes.
They're just going a long way to cover up this aggressive queef is what I'm thinking. They're like, that was loud. I know people in town heard it. Let's get the boot with the, let's pretend it's Sasquatch.
It was midnight in a small town in Illinois. There, if that would have reverberated off
everybody
the water, they're on
yeah.
the water. That water carries sound. You ever heard a loon? That loon could be miles away and you're hearing it off the water. So
you're just loud. But, she might want to get checked out.
So, like I said, seems a bit small, but as Nash bent over to inspect the prints further, he claimed he heard, quote, the most incredible shriek I have ever heard. It was in the bushes. It was no bobcat or screech owl, end quote. The officers had estimated that whatever made the sound was less than 300 feet away from them, which is also very far. So they fucking booked it out of there. And Nash, the officer, was so startled and moved so quickly that he dropped his gun in the process. Now,
so, can you imagine being so scared that you drop the one thing that's going to protect you?
Exactly. But also, I had to imagine it was holstered. Like, I don't think he had it out. So he had to move, he had to have moved in a fucking hurry to have it just pop out of his holster.
That is the most small town cop thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Nash comes back too. He comes back into the story as well.
He is the reason why military police officers in the military, in the army, we have to have lanyards on our guns. He's the exact reason. He gets so scared you drop your 9mm. That's amazing. It was probably one of those, like, tiny revolvers too.
It was,
you know,
the 70s. It was a revolver. Yeah. It was a revolver. That's what they said. Now, the two men, once they were back at the station, reported their findings and wrangled up a posse to go search for the monster. So now, at this point, like I said, the initial sighting happened, like, right before midnight. So by now it's like 2 a.m. the next day. So that'd be what, June 26th. Now, Officers Nash and Lindsay are now joined by two more officers, Bob Scott and Needham. I don't know Needham's first name. It wasn't in any sources that I could find. But they found another set of tracks almost immediately upon arriving. So Lindsay decided to grab a camera while the rest of the officers followed the tracks down the riverbed. They didn't make it very far before they heard the same scream that all the others had heard and said, fuck that, and called off the search just to, like, cower in their patrol car. So
yeah, I'm out.
The officers were eventually able to, like, collect themselves and continue the search. But besides some tracks and some splashing sounds in the distance, they said the splashing sound sounded like you ever been like in like knee deep water and try to move really fast.
Yeah,
that's the kind of like they said it sounded like a large creature, like trying to like run in knee deep water. But they didn't find anything besides just hearing that couple of things. So they figured, meh, whatever. You know, it's probably just like a misidentification or shadows and sounds in the night, like playing tricks on us. So once the sun came up, they decided to call off the search, call it a day, and figured that this would be like the last they heard of it. But they were very wrong. So
yeah, clearly, because you're not going to stop the mud monster.
No, you can't.
I've tried coffee, bran muffin, train ride. It's coming. You just got to get off the train quick enough to make sure you don't make a mess.
So that night at about 10:30 p.m., Christian Barrel, a 5-year-old child, was in his backyard catching fireflies in a mason jar when from behind his neighbor's fence, he saw a massive white figure standing on the other side. Pretty much scared shitless at this point, he drops the jar, ran into his house crying and screaming, Daddy, Daddy, there's a big ghost in the backyard.
And his dad was like, calm down, son, it's just a Mormon.
So he said, well, I mean, like, so obviously the dad was like, fucking, yeah, sure, bud, whatever you say. But that is until the neighbors, the Ray family, confirmed what the kid had seen. So at the same time,
was a Mormon, son. Glenn Beck was in the backyard.
So at the same time, the small kid that had seen this quote unquote ghost, Cheryl Ray and Randy Kreith, were sitting on the back porch with the light off, just like stargazing and talking when they heard a rustling in the bush just feet away from the porch. They thought it was the neighbor's kid spying on them.
And it turned out it was just that couple finger banging and they just didn't shave back then. So the bush rustling made sense.
That tracks. So Cheryl went to turn on the light while Randy got up to, I guess, fight a small kid. He was pissed. But as the light turned on, they were greeted with the same creature so many had encountered the night before, staring directly back at them. Cheryl described it as real tall, dirty, matted white hair, and it emitted a real bad odor that she said was, quote, really rank. The couple and the creature locked eyes and just kind of like stared at each other. The couple said that it felt like forever, but it was probably only like 30 seconds, which is still kind of like a long time to be like,
yeah,
a staring, yeah, contest with like a monster. But one thing that was in like their description that wasn't in any of the others is that they claim that the creature's eyes were glowing red. Cheryl said that it was a glow from a nearby street light, but Randy insisted that it was like actually like emitting red light. But either way, fuck that. And I don't want.
So like the Bigfoot had conjunctivitis as well.
Pretty much. Yeah. It was, it was very much pink eye, but also that tracks. He is an ass. So
yeah. Well, yeah, no, I mean, I just literally just recovered from conjunctivitis myself, but I got mine the day after the eclipse. So I blame the sun and possibly the moon. They might have been in cahoots with each other, but I needed prednisone to get rid of it. I couldn't even take regular antibiotics. I needed steroids as well.
I feel like the moon seems like kind of like a bitch, right?
Moon's kind of a dick.
Yeah, right.
Like the moon is that kid in high school who's like wants you to believe he's a vampire, but he really just had a dad who was super absent, so he, you know, had to come up with his own personality.
That tracks.
But he didn't have anybody be like, hey, Kevin, don't wear a cape. That's weird.
The mom's like, he's just creative.
No, he's fucking weird. He's fucking weird, Samantha. Kevin, stop wearing the cape.
But anyways, after the staring contest was over, the mud monster simply just like turned around and headed back down towards the nearby river. Now, the couple called the cops, obviously, and Officer Manwaring, the guy who was obsessed with the fact that this couple was not married, and Officer Nash, the kid who dropped his gun, were first on the scene and immediately were hit by the odor that the thing left in its wake. They also found the same tracks as the previous night. Upon learning of this discovery, the chief of police at the time dispatched the entire police force to the residence.
All two guys.
All 14 officers.
All right. It's still alarmingly small.
He also called in a canine unit from the neighboring town to assist. So this fucking small platoon of officers armed with rifles, pistols, and now a dog start their search for the monster. The first thing they noticed was a mysterious black slime that led from Cheryl's back porch all the way down to the river. The dog, whose name I learned was Reb, almost immediately picked up the scent and took off through the path of broken tree limbs and trampled brush left behind by the massive creature just moments ago. So, the dog was able to track it through the woods down a steep embankment into a small pond, but the brush was... it was like too thick to continue any further. The officers shone their flashlights around, looking for any clues or whatever as to where the creature could have gone. But suddenly, Reb got wind of the monster's scent and took off toward an abandoned barn located to the east of Cheryl Ray's house and north of the river, but stopped short of the barn door and started trembling and yelping in fear. Now, so this dog... Like if this was a normal dog, I get it. But this is like a seasoned professional tracking dog who is like a hardened off. They know this dog is very like he'll fucking kill anyone if he gets a chance to. So like the behavior of the dog at this point would kind of like stump the officers and its handler. So his handler attempted to get the dog to enter, but Reb dropped to his belly and started like scooting backwards, whimpering.
I feel like there's two options here. It's either, you know, this mud monster, or perhaps it's just an extremely tough cat.
I mean, cats,
because my dog is terrified of my cat. So
yeah, I mean, either way, but whatever, Sarge, whatever your theory is, Chief Burger decided that if whatever is in Chief that
Burger?
Barn,
oh, time out.
Chief Burger,
time out. Is this the first time we're addressing this name?
I said,
Chief Burger.
I said Chief of Police earlier. I did not say his name. His name is Chief Burger.
I love it so much. Makes me so happy. Chief Burger.
Chief
and
Burger.
The Hamburglar.
Yeah.
Chief Burger is probably lead detective on the special prosecution team coming after the Hamburglar. I took that far longer than I needed to.
Oh, it's great.
I took that way too far.
You're fine.
All right, moving on.
Chief Burger. He decided that if whatever is in the barn,
Major Fries,
that could make the most ruthless tracking dog that he's ever known acting this way, he needed backup.
Yeah, I would. I would call for backup.
So he radioed neighboring police departments for help, and within just a few short hours, over a dozen police cars were on scene and ready to walk into a barn. Well... it didn't matter either way, because in the hours between Reb cowering in fear and the cavalry arriving, the monster just kind of slipped out the back. There was nothing in there. So disappointed, they kind of have to search, and then everyone just kind of like left.
I wish there was a recording of that phone call. Excuse me, Colonel Hot Dog. Yes, it's Chief Burger. We've got a poop monster. In a barn or a large house cat. I don't know what it is, but we need all your guns. Send everyone.
Pretty much. So the Murfreesboro Mud Monster would continue to plague the community for the next week and a half. It was only spotted two more times after this, but it was more like the community's reaction to the thought of a giant monster in town.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't respond well to that. If they were like, there's a giant monster harassing people as they finger bang. I'd have a problem.
Yeah, so armed posses were popping up left and right looking for the creature, and the police were more worried about them shooting a dude thinking it was the monster than the monster itself. Because if we learn anything from the Enfield Monster, when armed
posses... small town America.
Yeah, when armed posses, whenever they see just the slightest of movement in a brush, they will fire upon it. We saw it with the Enfield Monster, the fucking Van Meter Visitor... almost actually, you know, almost every cryptid I've ever covered on the show, there has been someone shooting at it. So it's safe to say that
nothing really says America like, hey, that's weird. Let's shoot at it.
Yeah, no. We did it in the episode you were on with the Devil of the Dunes. They wanted to shoot the fuck out of that guy.
And that was in Provincetown.
Yeah.
If you're going to get shot at in Provincetown, you have no chance in Illinois.
To be fair, the Devil of the Dunes in Provincetown was a tall, dark figure. So the police shooting at it is nothing new in Massachusetts. Just going to say that real quick. Now, the next sighting was about 10 days later at 2 a.m. on July 7th. There was a traveling carnival in town, and they set up shop in Riverside Park, which is where, if you remember, the first couple who were mid-coitus stumbled upon the monster, and a couple of carnies named Otis Norris, Ray Adkerson, and Wesley Lavender were
sitting. I'm so happy about the carnies.
We're sitting by one of the carnival rides.
There's eight teeth between them.
Discussing the day's finances. I don't know.
I got three balls of lint, two bottle caps, and a cotton candy stick.
Pretty much, that's valid. When a couple of Shetland ponies that they had tied up on the other side of the vehicle they were sitting behind started making some noise. When they got up to see what all the commotion was about, they saw the usually calm ponies, because these are like the ponies that you take your kids to get a pony ride. They're usually pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Pretty calm.
Suicidal?
That's the one. That's it. They saw that these usually calm ponies / suicidal ponies were just like going ape shit. Like, their eyes were rolling in terror. They were tugging on the ropes.
They're like, we want to die, but not like this.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's exactly. They wanted to go out on their own terms. That's not how they wanted to go out. So the men looked for what it was that would like be causing the ponies to act this way. And that's when they noticed what they described as an 8 foot, 400 pound white Bigfoot man just calmly watching the ponies. He was just checking them out. The men took off running for help. And about an hour later, while the other men were.
So it was Glenn Beck.
Pretty much. Yeah. An hour later, as the other men were like running for help, another carny, who I don't know his name, I'm going to assume it's fucking Bisco Bob or whatever.
Sticky.
Yeah.
Sticky Pete.
Skids. We'll go with Skid. He claimed that he saw the creature he was like still watching the ponies, but like with its head cocked to the side, like it was confused or trying to figure out just like what the fuck a pony is kind of thing. And as far as we know, this was the last eyewitness report of the creature, with the few exceptions of like a few one-offs here and there over the years, but nothing like really exciting. Now, after this, after the carnies saw this, there were more armed posses just fucking strolling the park at night, which is...
Of course.
Yeah. There was Bigfoot hunters like Harkin Sorkin. Cryptozoologists went to investigate, like Lauren Coleman, the guy who runs the Cryptid Museum up in Portland, Maine. Also, I think he coined the term Bridgewater Triangle. Like, he went there and like tried to figure out...
He sent us a very nasty email when my podcast covered the Bridgewater Triangle.
Oh, is it because you used the term Bridgewater Triangle and he is very litigious about that?
No, it's because we made fun of him a lot and didn't cite his stupid YouTube channel.
Yeah, no, he's kind of a dickhead, so fuck that guy. And I don't care if anyone hears this, but you're not the first person I know who has run afoul of him and because he... I'm doing the thing I did on the other podcast.
No, that's fine. It's fine. Let's move on.
The media obviously didn't become like national news, like the fucking Pascagoula aliens or anything like that. But the media did come through and start writing articles about all this stuff.
Of course
they did.
Yeah.
But they all came to town doing their thing. And while some of it's interesting, I'm not going to cover any of that in this episode, because this episode is about one thing and one thing only. Asses. Abominable swamp slops. So anyway, Sarge.
You know, when he told me this episode was about asses, I thought we were talking about a very different subject.
No. Hey, it's all about fucking expect one thing.
The old bait and switch.
Exactly.
And you know what? You got me. You got me because I'm still here and I'm in. Let's talk about this.
Well, we can talk about it, but unfortunately, that is the story of the abominable swamp slob known as the Murfreesboro Mud Monster.
Story. The Murfreesboro Mud Monster. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a minor league baseball team out of Murfreesboro, and need to be called the Mud Monsters.
Yo, new merch drop. Let's do a collab. It's going to be baseball tees. It's going
to
be.
Yes. There needs to be baseball tees for every cryptid.
I've been trying to do that. I've been trying to get the Flatwoods Monsters. But I want the old baseball tees where it's like the big swoopy thing.
It's got to be the big. I don't want a modern one.
It's got to be Flatwoods with the swoopy thing. And then inside the swoopy thing, it says Monster. You know what I mean? Like that kind of shit.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So who are we going to do?
I'm all about this.
Who do we got to talk to about this?
Audience, comment on this video and tell us what you want to see for a baseball tee. But I love this idea. I'm such a nerd for minor league baseball teams as it is. I have a Toledo Mud Hens tee. I'm so about this.
Can't be a jersey. Has to be a baseball tee. Quarter sleeves.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? And the color of the sleeves has to match whatever the monster is. So Flatwoods Monster, you're going to go green.
It's got to be such a shitty minor league team that they can't afford the jersey. They just have the quarter length sleeves.
Yeah, it's Portland Sea Dogs.
There you go.
But yeah, so Sarge, Murfreesboro Mud Monster, that is the story. How are we feeling about it? Thoughts, questions? You know,
I really want to be a skeptic, but at the same time, I desperately want these things to be real because I think there's nothing better than for people to just be living their normal lives. You know, they're worried about politics, they're worried about inflation, and then a giant coming from a man whose whole white TikTok monster
is based on politics and inflation.
I can't help it. I want there to be some whimsy. I want there to be weird shit that you can't control. I want there to be some crazy mud monster that's just going to ruin the local election.
For sure. But
I want there to be a Trump rally where Trump just gets taken out by Mothman.
No, I agree.
I want something to be weird. I want there to be weird shit so that we can stop being dumb about stuff. Like, oh, I'm so mad about trans rights and books that I got swears in them. And then, you change your mind because Bigfoot is trying to eat your daughter who's getting finger blasted by Randy out in the Oldsmobile in a swamp.
The fact that there was two Randys in the story and one of them wanted to fight a kid and the other one was just apparently a huge piece of shit according to Judy's dad. I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know what Randy's problem
was. Poor Judy.
But also, fuck Judy's dad. That boy was able to afford a car.
Right.
He's doing fine in 1973.
Yeah, small town Illinois. The kid could afford a car.
Yeah.
He had a girlfriend.
I feel like he's crushing it.
Yeah. No, I want there to be cryptids because I want the world to be still weird.
Yeah.
We know too much about the world. We go digging around in the ocean, and every time we find a crazy fish, we have a heart attack because we've learned too much. We need to be afraid of things. Anyway.
All right, Sarge. Well, that's the end of the episode. Is there anything you want to plug before we sign off?
You can find me on the internet. Just Google Sarge the Destroyer, and you'll find all my socials on Instagram, TikTok. I'm on Twitter. I'm not calling it X. If you call it X, that's your problem.
No.
But I'm most active on TikTok and Instagram, so you can find me there.
Hell yeah. And if you want to find us on Instagram, it's at Cryptic Cocktail. Find me on TikTok, Cryptic Cocktail Party. It's not as exciting as Sarge's, so definitely follow him before you follow us. It's 100%.
We're all exciting in our own way.
Sure. I also got a Patreon if you want to support the show. It's $5 a month. You don't get any bonuses because I don't have the money to give you bonuses, but it does help support the show. Hosting and beer isn't free, so, anything else.
Yeah, and we drink a lot of cocktails on the show.
Exactly. And then I think that's... Oh, I got a Discord server. It's... You can join it. It's whatever. There's a link. No one's in it. No one talks in it. It's very desolate and lonely. But yeah, that's it. And with that, Sarge, do you want to say goodbye to the audience?
Hey, thank you for listening to this. And believe in cryptids because reality is crushing and terrifying. I love you.